Welcome to today's Broadleaf Member Spotlight. I'm Jessica Bowers, a member of the Broadleaf Writers Association board, and I am here today with Patricia Boyd Wilson. Patricia writes narrative poetry and short stories from a nostalgic point of view to engage the next generation with the legacy of their heritage. Simple things like baking cookies or complex things like surviving trauma can come from an ancient story that still speaks to the heart today. Her stories conjure up experiences of reminiscent as yesterday, as well as preserving the history of 100 years. You can find yourself, your family, and your neighbors in her narratives. Patricia is the product of 4 generations of storytellers. Her craft began as a little girl enjoying the stories and porch talk of her great-grandparents and grandparents. She says it all began with the oral tradition of retelling their stories until their stories became her stories. Patricia's also a retired public school educator living in the Metro Atlanta area. Thanks for joining me today, Patricia.
Thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit about yourself.
I am an only child, and as a result of that, I lived 2 lives, one in the city with my mother in the Midwest, and then every summer I went to the South, which was Tennessee, to be with my great-grandparents and my great-aunts and uncles, because my mom didn't want me to get in trouble in the city. We lived in an urban ghetto area, and the day after school was out, I was on a Greyhound bus.
How long were you on that Greyhound? How long was that journey?
About 12 hours with stops in between. That was back when Greyhound buses stopped everywhere. Mm. And just the trip alone, you know, was a big deal, but it was, you know, don't get off the bus. 'Cause I always had a little shoebox with a lunch in it, and didn't have to, you know, get off to at the stops or anything to buy food or anything. So
they would send you by yourself on these trips?
Later, when I was a little older, but when I was young, my mother actually would ride down with me and literally turn around and go back the same day.
That's a long trip.
It is. And my mother's brother, it's just the two of them, my uncle would meet me at the bus stop and take me to his house. And then I'd float from relatives throughout the family, depending on what other people had to do, you know, if they had to go to work or go to the field or whatever, then I'd end up with my great-grandmother or my aunt or somebody. And yeah. So, you know, being an only child and being the only girl in a few generations, I have one older cousin, first cousin, who's a girl. She's older than all of us. And then there were 3 boys and me. So because I was the baby and a girl, I couldn't hang out with the boys all the time. But I wasn't old enough to participate in those conversations and stories. So I had to learn to be real quiet and busy playing or doing something so that I could listen to what they were saying, because I love to eavesdrop on the conversations of my elders.
So how did those experiences lead you to storytelling and poetry?
I think because I thought as a child that they were telling stories. You know, it was much later when I was, you know, much older that I realized that they were just having conversations. Because it was a small town and people live so far apart, if somebody stopped by and they were saying what happened in the city or what happened down the road, you know, and they were having conversations. But to me, they sound like stories. I was fortunate that my mother taught me how to read when I was 3. And her thing in the city was to take me to the library once a week to get books and to read, you know, to improve my reading every day. And so from that, I soon got bored with children's books and I would sneak into the adult section. Back in the day, you couldn't just walk anywhere in the library. There was a children's section and there was an adult section. And I would grab books from there to read. And my mother didn't really check to see. All I had to have was a stack of books. She didn't check to see what kind of books that they were. And
As long as you're
also
reading.
magazines. Exactly. Also magazines that my mother used to subscribe to. And all these stories just, I don't know, they opened my world. They gave me imagination. They made me want to see things and do things and find out more. I was always curious. Still am. My grandchildren say I have the gift of interrogation. So I'm still curious. I still ask a lot of questions and want to know more what's behind the story. So that's kind of how I started writing, especially finishing stories that I didn't get to hear the end of. So then I'd make up the ending to suit my own fancy.
So I know you've written several books, and that includes some devotionals, poetry, short stories, and a novella. And your latest book just came out in February. So can you tell us about that latest book, Talk from the Family Tree?
Talk from the Family Tree originated from looking at pictures of my family. My family is big on family history. In fact, I have some cousins who made it their life business to put together all the story of our family from slavery coming forward. And we were fortunate that somebody in the family wrote the story. But what they were trying to do was verify how much of what was written was actually true. So they went to courthouses and, various places, census, and all of those things to find information, which led to a collection of pictures. And so at at one of my family reunions, one of my cousins had all these pictures spread out on the table, and she was trying to find out who knew who these people were. And I was able to pick out my great grandfather from the picture, from the pictures that were on the table. And I was like, this is my great grandfather, and he this and that and the other, telling his story. And everybody was like, "How do you know this?" And I was like, "'Cause I grew up with him."
You were there.
And so, that got me to looking at old pictures that my mom had and that my cousins had and just my grandmother had. And as I looked at those pictures, I started to remember some of those conversations that took place on the porch or in the yard or in the field. And then I was, and I thought, okay, that's a lot about the stories of being in the South, but there were stories at home too in the urban area. People would come to my mom's house on Sundays after church, and they would sit at the kitchen table and they would tell these stories. And I was like, my whole background is stories. I need to capture some of these. Well, needless to say, I don't fully remember every story, so I used my creativity to generate stories that were inspired by those old stories. So they're mostly fiction. Some of them have a little bit of me in them, but most of them are broadly inspired by the stories I heard as a child.
Well, and being able to capture that feel, that nostalgia of those generational stories and that connection, it's so special that you have that. Would you mind sharing a little bit from Talk from the Family Tree with us?
Okay, I'd love to. This story is called Food Girl Fun. I can remember my grandmother, my great grandmother, always talking about my mother's generation doing crazy things. And even though, today you say fool was kind of an insult, for them, I think it was kind of a cross between pride that that person was experiential and, kind of why would somebody do that? Because it was so far from their world, right? So this story, Fool Girl Fun, is one of those kinds of stories. So how's Lucinda, Maylene? Miss Sally asked as she slurped her glass of iced tea. The child is still crazy as a Betsy bug, Aunt Maylene laughed. Lucinda was their favorite subject most Sunday afternoons. Miss Sally always stopped by after church to have some tea and tea cakes. She would take off her Sunday go-to-meeting hat, and with her long face knit, she would take off her shoes and make herself comfortable in my grandmother's parlor. What she done now? She dang near drowned herself and her whole doggone family. That's what Aunt Maylene said, matter-of-factly. Don't tell me they waded out in that old pond in the back of your house, back of your barn, Miss Sally snorted when she laughed. Her cashmere bouquet powder mixed with the old English furniture polish added a sickly sweet smell to the room. That would have been better than what they did, Aunt Maylene protested. That fool girl and her fool husband took them a vacation to Colorado and decided to go White River rafting. You say what now? Miss Sally gawked at my aunt with sincere confusion. What in the world is that? That's when you get in a rubber boat and float down the river until you get to the rushing waters and the current takes you for a ride down the river, Aunt Maylene explained. Ain't you seen it on TV? I think I have. I didn't know Lucinda could swim. She can't. Hush your mouth, girl. What's she doing in a rubber boat on the river if she can't swim? That's what I'm trying to tell you. She perked near drowned herself and her whole family. Wait a minute. You mean she took her children too? Miss Sally moved to the edge of her seat on the davenport, pulling her Sunday shoes off her feet. She indeed did it. It was her family vacation. The three boys, their dad, and Lucinda all in the rubber boat together. Aunt Maylene leaned back in her rocking chair to let that sink in while she nibbled a tea cake. She had changed into a floral house dress, but her hair was still in a tight, shiny French roll. Aunt Maylene went to the Methodist church in Newton, but Miss Sally went to the CME church right across the road. Aunt Maylene had about a half hour of home time before the CME church let out, and her best friend, Miss Sally, came over. Miss Sally would spend the afternoon with Aunt Maylene while she waited for her husband to come back to town to pick her up. He brought her to church every Sunday, but he wouldn't set foot in a church for himself. Okay, Miss Maylene, start from the beginning. I want to hear all of this, Miss Sally sat back, rubbing one of her fat, sore feet. She crossed her foot over her leg like a man. I wonder why she wore shoes that hurt her feet. All right, Aunt Maylene settled in to tell the story. Lucinda and Jeremy decided they was going to take a real vacation so the boys could see something other than the countryside we live in. They wanted them to see some big city and some other terrain other than the old dusty town. Their words, not mine. So they loaded up the car and headed west to Colorado. They got them a hotel in Buena Vista and set out for a family adventure. At least that's what Lucinda called it. Her world life, her whole life is an adventure, if you ask me, Miss Sally said. Sure enough, Aunt Maylene agreed. Anyway, they saw this sign advertising family raft trip at Bear Creek River, and they decided it sounded like fun. Which one of them been to a river rafting before? Miss Sally interrupted. Neither one, Aunt Maylene answered, showing her disgust. Lord have mercy, Miss Sally replied with the same disgust. Lucinda said the people in charge said that this was perfect adventure for a young family with children. Said the man told them the rapids were moderate and there was lots of beautiful scenery for them to see. They saw other folks with kids getting in the rafts, so they decided it was a good idea and a good deal. I was sitting on the hassock by the window, trying to embroider a rose on a pillowcase, but I was also listening attentively to the story. I nearly fell off the hassock when Aunt Maylene called my name. Billie Jean, go bring me my pocketbook out of the bottom of the shift row. Yes, ma'am. I ran across the room and down the hall. Ain't no need to run in this house, Aunt Maylene called behind me. That girl is all legs. She probably can't help but run, I heard Miss Sally said. She snorted a laugh, but Aunt Maylene did not respond. I brought the pocketbook, gave it to Aunt Maylene, and returned to my position on the hassock. This is a picture they took when they got into the raft. See, it ain't nothing but a rubber boat. Aunt Maylene handed the picture to Miss Sally. It's roomy, though, Miss Sally said as she looked at the picture. Now you got to admit, Sister Maylene, they is a good-looking family. You're right about that. Jeremy is a strong and handsome young man, and Lucinda always been pretty girl. These boys got their parents' looks, Aunt Maylene said with a smile of pride. As you can see, the three boys have on life jackets, but Lucinda and Jeremy don't. Yeah, I see. Why not? Miss Sally inquired. You tell me, Aunt Maylene replied sarcastically. Lucinda said they had such a nice time at first. The current was moving them very slowly down the river. Then, even you're going to have to find out by reading the rest of the book.
Oh, first of all, I like Miss Sally.
I can remember distinctly how they wore those big old hats to church and had a nice hairdo underneath and shoes, heels, probably the only time they ever wore a little bit of a heel, and their feet would be swollen. I can remember that so well, and I just had to find a way to include it in the story.
I think my feet hurt with her. I couldn't even imagine. I hate wearing heels. Couldn't imagine jumping in a boat when you can't swim. Like, I would not be caught doing some whitewater rafting. So it's impressive that Lucinda, correct?
Right.
Was so adventurous. I'll say that.
Well, I'll have to say that my husband and I did a similar thing. We
Yeah.
did go White River rafting, and I couldn't swim. But my husband could swim, and my children could swim. So that was a little better than Lucinda.
Wouldn't drown.
Pert near.
As for folks who want to hear the rest of that story and find out a little bit more, I know that they can find Talk from the Family Tree on your website, which is benelog.com. That is BENELOG.com. So I have to ask, where does Benelog come from?
Benelog was sort of made up by me. I wanted to have my books be good words. And so as I thought about that, I thought about benediction, but I also thought about eulogy because, of course, my great grandparents and grandparents are gone now. And both of those lean toward good things being said, you know. And so I thought, okay, I want to capture that. So I got the benna for the good and the log for the word. Those are prefixes and root words from Greek and Latin. And so that's how I came up with the name, because that's what I really believe represents the things I write. They are that people can enjoy and gather around and experience. As you said in introduction, the themes are universal, but it's not the news, which isn't always good, you know. It's those things that can bring a smile to your heart.
Nice. So with these themes of telling these past stories, I'm curious if right now you could tell past you anything about writing, what would it be?
Probably not to be afraid that you know, in the beginning, and still now today, I have bins of notebooks and pieces of paper where I've written, you know, a poem or a story or something, and it never has been seen by the public eye. So I'd probably tell myself not to be afraid that my stories are, you know, enjoyed by people, and those audiences have stories of their own, and sometimes it perks a memory that maybe they forgot about, you know, because things that are nostalgic seem to touch everybody, you know. And realize, you know, that I'm not the only one. One of my favorite authors, Crystal Wilkinson, she writes stories about what it was like being in the Appalachians, growing up a Black family in the Appalachian Mountains. And I find that very interesting, you know. So I guess I tell myself people will be interested in the things you write.
I mean, at the end of the day, we are our stories and we connect to each other through that. And I love that you are using these memories and these things that have happened with your family to then draw other folks into not only sharing your memories and your stories, but then kind of giving them permission to do the same thing on their end, you know, to share and
Right.
connect. So
Exactly. I always tell my readers, if they have a story they want to share with me, I'm all ears.
are you working on anything right now? Do you have any plans for more writing?
I am. I'm working on a devotional study. It's called Awakened to Worship. And hopefully it will come out early fall.
Okay.
Hopefully.
So that'll be two titles in 1 year. That's prolific.
Oh, actually, this title took a while. I actually started it before the pandemic.
Oh.
And during the pandemic, I couldn't get that muse, as they say. I was very stunned in my writing by being closed in. You know, I'm an outside girl. I love nature and I love being outside and going places. There's hardly a day that I stay at home all day. And so that slowed me down quite a bit. And then maybe the last year of the pandemic, I started writing again. And you know, and I'm thankful to writing groups that kind of kept us going through Zoom to get motivated again. So, you know, this book took longer than any book I've ever written.
I mean, arguably, that book took a lifetime to write. Because
Felt
it
like
has so many of your stories from your childhood in it.
oh well yeah that too that too and I wanted to share this poem with you because as I said my background is both urban and rural and this is just a little poem that comes from the urban setting and this particular poem actually me and my friends. But I don't say that in the book, but it's true. It's called Strutting Interrupted. My first black rabbit fur, midi-length coat with snow muff sleeves and a soft fuzzy hood, black suede high heel boots, matching leather and suede saddlebag, arms linked with my boyfriend Lester. Long cashmere overcoat, best friends laughing, teasing, walking fast to the holiday party. Lisa and her Jeremy James, Marilyn, Lester, and me bragging about the good times we always share, walking away from the snow-covered car, navigating the icy sidewalk, freshly shoveled around the park. Chattering away, trying to balance, giggling as stumbles, daring our guys to let us fall. We're sharp. We're ready. If you scream, you die.
Oh, wow.
Two guys holding 45 magnums pointed in our faces, the hole in the barrel expanding before my eyes. A preening, whimpering rises among us. If she screams, you die. Our hands slam simultaneously over Marilyn's mouth. Silent tears roll down our made-up faces as we meet their demands. Rabbit coat gone, cashmere coat taken, Lisa's fox-collared jacket dropped in their bag. Wallets, purses, jewelry, and Jeremy James' alligator shoes all ripped away in what seemed like hours, yet only a matter of minutes. We stand freezing, no one speaking. The 98 Seville rolls away with our fun. Male expletives break and penetrate the silence and the shock, shivering tears as we huddle. And hurry back to the car, thanking God Lester still had the keys. We're sad. We're defeated. We're glad to be alive.
Oh my gosh. I started off with so much joy.
Bring the joy back. We were alive.
You know what? There are things to be grateful for there. My
Definitely.
gosh.
Definitely. But it gives you an idea of the stark differences between the life I had growing up in the city and growing up in the country. And I'm thankful for it, definitely, because it rounds out who I am and who I was supposed to be.
Well, for folks who want to find more of your books, they can go to benelog.com. Once again, that is BENE-LOG.com. They can also find you on Facebook. Also under Benelog with no dash, so that is just BENELOG. You've got that Facebook page available. Thank you so much for joining me today, Patricia. I have really appreciated everything you've shared. I've really enjoyed our time.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Hi, welcome to today's Broadleaf Member Spotlight. I'm Jessica Bowers, a member of the Broadleaf Writers Association board, and I am here today with Patricia Boyd Wilson. Patricia writes narrative poetry and short stories from a nostalgic point of view to engage the next generation with the legacy of their heritage. Simple things like baking cookies or complex things like surviving trauma can come from an ancient story that still speaks to the heart today. Her stories conjure up experiences of reminiscent as yesterday, as well as preserving the history of 100 years. You can find yourself, your family, and your neighbors in her narratives. Patricia is the product of 4 generations of storytellers. Her craft began as a little girl enjoying the stories and porch talk of her great-grandparents and grandparents. She says it all began with the oral tradition of retelling their stories until their stories became her stories. Patricia's also a retired public school educator living in the Metro Atlanta area. Thanks for joining me today, Patricia.